Proof credit.
This is White Sox Weekly, your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago.
Now here's your host, Jeff Mellor.
Pitch. A swing and a little tap on the ground under the glove of the pitcher. White Sox win. Montgomery scores. Mike Tauchman with a base hit. And his teammates out to greet him in shallow right.
Wow. Another example of how important it is to make contact. The pitcher came charging in on a slow roller, as slow as a bunt, and he whiffed. He just absolutely whiffed, trying to hustle, get to it, and make a play at the plate. He forgot to catch the ball.
Walk-off winner last night, 5-4, as Mike Tauchman delivers in the bottom of the 11th to put a capper on what was a fantastic day here at Raitt Field. And I promise you it is going to be another fantastic one. I don't know if the results will match last night's, but no matter what, it is a celebration. It has been. It started last night with the unveiling of the Mark Burley statue here at Raitt Field, in Raitt Field, right between section 104 and 105 on the concourse. I already see a few fans out there right now as we speak, taking pictures and checking it out. If you're headed to the ballpark today, it's, again, Raitt Field, right between 104 and 105 on the concourse there. I promise you it will probably be a heavy traffic area today and probably for the remainder of the season. But it was a pretty cool event. And if you missed it, don't worry. We're going to get you caught up with a lot of what you might have missed yesterday. We carried the entire ceremony during the pregame. We're also going to be carrying a very fun ceremony today, as the 2005 White Sox World Series champs will be recognized. So 2:30 today, when our pregame begins, before today's game between the White Sox and Guardians, we'll have that celebration for you as well. But a lot to do today, so let's just get after it. Mark Burley was the man of the hour, celebrated yesterday, and we're going to let you hear his remarks after the statue was unveiled here shortly. But I want to bring to you a conversation that he had with Chris Black and Adam Abdallah, who were filling in for Waddle and Sylvie yesterday afternoon. Prior to the unveiling, Mark Burley joined Black and Abdallah, and this is that conversation.
Mark, congratulations. Thanks for taking some time.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you very much.
Have you seen the statue?
I've seen it. The last time I saw it was at Sox Fest. We had to come up. They kind of had it all molded out of the clay, and they were kind of getting the final approval touches on it, I guess, and then they were going to, I guess, kind of frame it out and then send that off to actual make it into the statue part. So pretty much the last time, whenever Sox Fest was, January, February, whenever that was the last time I saw it.
Did you have any influence on it before they started to put it together?
Yeah, I mean, they sent or showed a bunch of pictures and kind of thrown some ideas out there, and kind of, you know, wasn't just me. I mean, I had a say so, or, you know, I could have, I guess, said no at the end of the day, but a bunch of people threw their minds together and chose what we thought would kind of be best fitting for not just my career and what I meant for Chicago and just kind of everything. It's not just like one significant thing that I'm kind of known for. I think it's kind of a combination of everything.
So you're back here at the ballpark. It's a 20-year anniversary of the World Series, the 05 team. A bunch of the guys are back here. Saw you on TV with Ozzy a little bit ago. What's going through your mind as you reminisce about that team from 20 years ago?
Seeing how fat and old and gray-haired everybody is. But and it's like I said, I told them, it's like, you know, when I was playing, they would have old-timer days, and you'd see some of these old-time guys come out there on the field, and, you know, you'd see them, and I'm like, man, look how old those guys are. And that's like, now that's us. We're here actually being those guys.
You know, we were just talking about how that team maybe doesn't get the same respect from the national media from looking back at great World Series runs. And we were talking about the four complete games and the ALCS. Like, when you think about that, and Adam, my partner here, said that, like, that's something that likely will never be duplicated. What do you think about that performance that you guys were a part of?
Yeah, I don't think it'll happen even just four complete games for one team in the regular season. Just the way that the numbers are, and, like, you know, they're going off of so many pitches and looking. It's too many numbers instead of, like, the manager watching the pitchers pitching and how they're performing.
Right.
So I don't think it'll ever happen. You know, guys don't even go seven innings as like a going 15 innings back in the day. But, yeah, I mean, I think that was an awesome thing. And I think it was, you know, started off by Contreras going out there, and we just all took off and ran with it. And it's not like we were trying to do that. I think we were just all going out there trying to go deep in the game, and that's how it played out.
You were certainly ahead of your time as far as the speed. I know that I saw a stat that there was once a 99-minute game that you pitched. When you're moving that fast, what is going through your mind as a pitcher and going through it with the catcher, the signs and all that kind of stuff? Is it more trust in your catcher at that point? Or are you just throwing whatever he's telling you to throw? What is your mindset as opposed to someone who was, you know, some of these pitchers that were against the pitch clock when it was first implemented?
Yeah, I mean, I'll always work quick. I just get on the mound and wait for the catcher to put the signal down and throw it. Never been a big shaker. Just kind of, you put it down, I'm going to trust what you're calling. I'm going to try to make the best pitch. Whatever you're calling, I'm going to try to throw the best pitch at that time and hopefully for the best result. So I love the pitch clock. I wish it was in here when I was playing. Everybody always enjoyed when I pitched because it was a quick game, but I had to sit through the four long games in between my start, and that's the part that I didn't like. So I love the pitch clock. I love how quick games are. I've been to a few in St. Louis, and usually I'll make it till about the fifth or sixth inning, and I've had enough. And the last game we went to, it was like in the fifth inning, and it was just like an hour in. And I'm like, holy crap, this game is flying by. So I love the speed of the game. I mean, there's no reason to prolong everything out there. Just get it and throw it.
Yeah, we used to always joke that you would always have a snappy start. Like, it'd be a snappy game because Burley was on the mound. Mark Burley joining Black and Abdallah here on ESPN 1000, the ESPN Chicago app. Mark, you pitched 27 times in a White Sox uniform where you threw a complete game. That doesn't happen anymore. How much different has it changed just watching baseball and seeing that guys do not throw complete games anymore?
Yeah, I mean, it's changed a ton. Like, I honestly, if I was pitching nowadays, I don't think I would have had a third of the career that I had. I don't think I would have lasted deep in the games. I think they would have gone off too many books and looking at the, you know, the papers and the computer says, hey, this guy at 72 pitches needs to be pulled because his ERA starts climbing after that. Like, I don't even know if I would last in the game right now. I'm not a fan of it. I think it should be more on the manager of looking at the pitcher and seeing how he's doing, and if he's pitching good, no matter if the person behind the computer told him to pull him after 80 pitches or whatever it is, and then he's pitching good, and the manager needs to decide to leave him in there. But that's one part of the game that I'm not a big fan of.
Great. And the one thing that I always think of watching is, like, isn't that a part of sports, the competition aspect? Like, not every outcome is guaranteed. So you, the athlete, you have the ability to change that outcome. And I feel like when you're only going off of the stats and just seeing, like, well, third time through the rotation, you got to take him out, that eliminates some of that edge that maybe a competitor like yourself could have.
Yeah, I mean, that's, like I said, like, there was no chance in hell that I'd be lasting that long for a career. And then, like I said, it takes away from the manager. The managers don't have any in-game decisions, really, besides, okay, when they get to that pitch count that they got to pull them at, then that's when they go out and take them out, no matter – if he's pitching a no-hitter, perfect game, whatever it is, it's like, he's at that pitch count. We got to yank him out of there.
It looks like the radar has cleared up for tonight. I was kind of hoping for a 20-year anniversary of the tarp slide from you. Is there something like that off the field? We've talked a lot about on-the-field stuff with you. Is there something like that off the field that we don't know about as fans? A lot of documentaries have been made about the 05 team, and a lot of stories have been told. Is there anything that we don't know about you guys in that clubhouse and that team?
You're asking me to remember stuff from back in 05. I can't remember what happened last week. No, I think we just all gelled good together. I mean, I think every story is documented. Somebody's talked about it. But, I mean, we just went to battle every day, and we weren't expected to win anything. And we went out there and started off hot and continued it through the year, and obviously went through the playoffs and won the whole thing. And that's, I mean, there's really nothing, no secret to it. It was just, everything like laid in place for us.
We're talking about a lot of the guys from 05 and being ahead of their time. One of the guys that was definitely ahead of his time was closer Bobby Jenks, throwing in the hundreds before guys were regularly throwing in the hundreds. And he's someone who couldn't be here tonight, who passed away earlier this week and could not be there. What are just some of your memories of hanging around and being with Bobby Jenks?
He was just he was a little kid and a big grown body. Literally always screwing around, having fun. You know, he would get serious when he was supposed to come in and pitch, but other than that, if you didn't see a smile on his face or he was doing something to mess with somebody else and have a good time with them, there had been something wrong. He was always happy and happy-go-lucky in the clubhouse and always wanted to have fun.
So we'll have the statue revealed at 6:45 tonight. Besides tonight, what else are you looking forward to this weekend to celebrate the 20th anniversary of the 05 team?
I think it's just seeing all the guys and talking to them. It's like I don't keep in contact with a lot of these guys, you know, since we stopped playing. So just seeing some of these guys, it's been, you know, 10, 15 years since I've even talked to them on the phone. So just kind of meeting, talking back up with them and kind of seeing how everything's going and seeing what they're up to.
Just love listening to Mark Burley talk baseball. That was with Black and Abdallah, who were in for Waddle and Sylvie yesterday. I'm Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly. Hey, Sox fans, celebrate the 05 reunion weekend with us right here at the ballpark. Don't miss tomorrow, July 13th, as the Sox take on the Guardians at 1:10. The first 10,000 fans in attendance will receive a combined Southside Legends bobblehead featuring Mark Burley, John Garland, Freddie Garcia, and Jose Contreras, presented by United, Chicago's hometown airline, that will commemorate the four complete games in the 2005 ALCS back-to-back-to-back-to-back that the White Sox starters pitched when the White Sox beat the Angels. To purchase tickets, visit thewhitesox.com/2005. And if you're listening right now, it's 12:42. You can probably get on out to the ballpark today and be here in the park for what will be a fabulous celebration. So not just tomorrow, but come on out today, too, if you don't have plans. I'm Jeff Meller. When we come back, I'll let you hear more from Mark Burley after the statue was unveiled. That was prior to him seeing the statue and having that memorable moment here last night. Well, when we come back, we'll let you hear Mark Burley's remarks to the crowd here at Rate Field last night. I'm Jeff Meller. This is the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Fantastic, warm, fuzzy feelings. Mark Burley, perfecto, and Hawk Harrelson, the man on the call right there, scheduled to be in attendance for today's celebration of the 2005 World Series champions during the pregame ceremony here at Rate Field before the White Sox and Guardians play game number 3 of 4 before the All-Star break hits. Sox fans, save all summer long with our summer savings section. Enjoy 20 weekday and 25 weekend select lower level tickets while supplies last. The summer savings sections is presented by Wintrust. Different approach, better results. Includes fees, some exclusions apply. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/section. So in yesterday's pregame ceremony, Mark Burley did address the crowd here at Rate Field, and it was actually, for the most part, a huge crowd surrounding the statue after it was unveiled in Rate Field. So even though there were 25,000-plus here in attendance, it felt like 90% of them were all in Rate Field yesterday, and Mark Burley addressed the crowd after his statue was unveiled.
I want to first start off by saying, obviously, we all miss Jinx. Wish he was here, and I promise you, if he was here, he'd be sitting on top of my head, making faces at me, spitballs in my face, trying to get to make me laugh. And but yeah, we're gonna miss him, and you know, rest in peace, brother. For the rest of my teammates that are here, whoever the genius was to have both of these things in the same weekend, thank you for making me look good when they're all actually here, because half of them probably wouldn't be. But thank you guys for being here and supporting me. Lou, you and your team, you guys are really easy to work with. Obviously made an incredible sculpture. If anybody's looking for a statue for their front yard, I would recommend, not of me, of yourself, go see Lou and he can make one for you. And also Reifert, dealt with him a lot during hunting season, trying to make phone calls, getting me up here, getting pictures and a lot of stuff. And, you know, I'm usually in the woods, so it was a hassle going back and forth trying to get all that worked out. Front office, White Sox front office, from the day that I've got here, from me, my family, friends, you guys have taken care of us above and beyond up until this point today, I mean, and probably from here on out. So I can't thank you guys enough, not even just the front office, security guards, ushers. I mean, anybody we've run into, you guys have been outstanding to us, so thank you. My parents, obviously mom and dad are here. My kids, thank you guys. I'm proud of the way you guys have grown up to most of the time be sweet children. My wife for holding down the fort, making me and the kids look halfway decent for this trip, because he wouldn't have recognized me if it was up to me. And obviously Jerry, I mean, getting a number retired is one thing, and then now this. I'm not the smartest person to come up with the words to express my gratitude for this. I mean, I want to say thank you, but I don't feel like that's enough. But this is an incredible freaking honor. So thank you very much. And then obviously you fans, you guys made it easy. You guys made it easy for to go out there and perform, pitch, do what I did. Obviously, I had some more cheers than boos, but I had my moments of boos too. But I can't thank you guys enough, and love you, Chicago.
That was Mark Burley yesterday here at Raitt Field. A very gracious and heartfelt thank you to the White Sox organization and fans for immortalizing him in bronze yesterday with the unveiling of his statue, again, in Raitt Field between Section 104 and 105. I'm Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly. We have lots more great stuff for diehard White Sox fans. A little bit of nostalgia today as we're celebrating reunion weekend here for the 2005 World Series champs. When we come back, if you missed it last night during the game, fantastic conversation between Ozzie Guillen and Scott Podsednik, who joined Len and DJ in the booth during an inning. It was a long inning, which made it that much better because it was so much fun listening to Ozzie and Scotty Pods reminisce about the 05 season. And so I'm going to let you hear it if you missed it. It was just I can't even, like, if you're a Sox fan, you're not going to want to miss this. So when we come back, we will give you that. This is White Sox Weekly on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Podsednik hits one to deep right center field. Back at the wall. This ball is gone. Podsednik goes deep. His second home run of the postseason. And the White Sox win it 7-6.
Ah, yes, Game 2 of the World Series. Scotty Pods on that rainy Sunday night connects and walks the White Sox off with a win, just like they walked off with a win here at Raitt Field in the second game of their doubleheader here on ESPN 1000, your home of the White Sox. Quickly, before I let you hear from Scotty Pods, along with Ozzie Guillen, who were in the booth with Len Casper and Darren Jackson last night, let's pause 10 seconds for stations to identify themselves. Enter the Ultimate Fan Sweepstakes for your chance to create your own hamburger. July's winner will work with the Chicago White Sox head chef to design and name their own hamburger that will be sold in the ballpark. The winner will also receive 25 tickets to the CIBC Fan Box to host their family and friends. Enter at whitesox.com /sweepstakes. All right, as I mentioned, special guests in the booth with Len and DJ. You know what? And just so you know, there will be some play-by-play intermixed between their conversation, but I promise you, it was so good. It's not live. Obviously, this happened last night. So the White Sox, spoiler alert, they did win the baseball game last night. But you'll hear a little bit of play-by-play intermixed with Ozzie Guillen and Scott Podsednik as they joined Len Casper and Darren Jackson in the booth last night.
So Ozzie's with us. Scott Podsednik is with us. And I got a bone to pick with Ozzie, if I may.
Let him have it.
All right. Well, hang on. You know, we were together in Florida.
Yes.
Yes, we were.
You're talking about rings.
Called strike. So Ozzie kept talking about, you know, the fundamentals, doing the right stuff, the small ball, steal bases. Scott, you did all that stuff. And then you get in the postseason and you hit the ball over the fence.
He was cork.
Ozzie never talked about the home runs.
That's a funny thing, guys.
The fouled back, still two strikes.
We hit a lot of home runs.
Yes,
we did.
You did.
But a couple days ago, I watched, and we lead the American League. Obviously, National League, the pitcher had bunt.
Right.
We lead the American League in sacrifice bunt.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Look here, sacrifice bunt, good defense, good pitching. Steal bases. Yeah. That's the reason we had the man next to me.
Yes.
I talked to Kenny. I said, we need more speed. But we hit home runs. But in the end of the day, it was pitching, defense, and good baseball.
Yeah. Well, tweaking you. You did everything, which was why you guys were so great.
What you wanted was more versatility. The year prior, you guys led the league in home runs.
Yes.
Swing and a miss, strike three, one away.
05. We were fifth in home runs that year. We hit 200 home runs. So we could pop the ball out of the ballpark. But we also had the ability to manufacture a run. When it was a close game, we had guys who could handle the bat, understood their row, could hit behind runners, get guys over. Everybody keeps talking about the small ball. That's what
it was.
It was
a small ball.
We were playing baseball.
That's right. Funny because I just talked to Tadahiro Iguchi. Finally, I started speaking Japanese. I talked to Japanese straight to him and on the interpreter.
Cantonese.
Finally,
20 years later.
I talked to the interpreter to say, the key of this ball club, it was pitching.
Yeah.
But the offense, we have great kid hits. I didn't mean like, we win a lot of games by one run. But the soon, Posehn is on base, Tadahiro do whatever he does, move the guy over, steal the bases. We do a lot of things. Oh, obviously, pitching was... Not the starters.
Yes.
People not remember about the guys in the bullpen.
Oh, come on. Cots, Polite.
Oh, my Polite. God. Amazing. This is like Damaso Marte,
yes.
Vizcaíno. You know what I mean? They don't remember those type of guys, the bench we have. And
Dustin Hermanson.
It's a funny thing because this team didn't do themselves.
Yeah.
So, I like Ozzie said, nope. They didn't do themselves. They respect each other, love each other. They play for each other. And that's what you need. And hopefully, I said that in the air today. Hopefully the Major League Baseball, the White Sox team, seeing those guys.
Yeah.
Like, they see those guys, like, older, obviously.
Yes.
Everybody know how the body like Posehn.
Yes.
I said, if those guys did it, we can do it.
Yeah.
And I want them to see that tomorrow when they go to the field to present that day.
3-2 coming to Stephen Kwan, swinging a hard ground ball past Sosa and out into right center for a base hit.
This guy is always on base.
He's always on base. Scott, was in the clubhouse the other day, and I told Austin Slater, nice sack bunt. It was the second of your career. He goes, really? I thought I had bunted a little more often. And Michael A. Taylor chimed in, and he goes, why is it that you get into October against tough pitching and one-run games, and the manager asks you to bunt, and he hasn't asked you to bunt in 6 months? And his point was, why don't we bunt more in the regular season to kind of get ready for the bigger games? And I thought it was a really interesting, almost obvious observation that I had never heard.
Well, you bring up a really good point. You get caught up in the day-to-day grind of the regular season. When you get to the postseason, games are different. There's a higher expectation. You're going to see good starting pitching. You're going to see good arms out of the bullpen. And you're going to have the ability to work a run in here and there. You happen to pop one out of the ballpark, that's great. But you're going to have to play baseball, like you mentioned. And you're right. I feel like that year we played so many 1-2-3-run ball games, tight ball games, that we were battle tested and ready for those close, tight ball games in the postseason. And because of that versatility, we'd get a big home run from Jermaine Canerco here. But again,
from you,
But we had the ability to manufacture one as well, no question.
I see a couple of days ago all the stuff I did, and I feel proud because not Aussie baseball. That's the way we ship. Guys supposed to bunt, they had to bunt it. I remember we scored 3 runs against Kansas. I saw it on TV. I never watched myself. I never watched the team. My kids made me watch the episode. Then a couple of days ago, all of a sudden, Willie Harris, yep, bunt. He come to hit, Posehn going to be on my first and second, bunt.
Yes.
Now we have first and second. They throw ball away. We score 5 runs in that inning because we bunt the right way.
But Ozzie, but you bring up a good point, and what I think is important as well is the players embrace that, and they understand their role, and they understand who they are when they come to the ballpark. What do they have to do that night to win a ball game? I feel like we had a lot of unselfish guys. We checked our ego at the door. We all have egos, right? But we did not let our ego get in the way of doing what was needed that particular night to win a ball game. Because you got to do different things each and every night. You got to be versatile. You got to be fluid. You got to be able to do different things. And that ball club had the acumen and the understanding of what it took to win a ball game.
That's a reason I'm getting a little upset with this ball club. They're teaching it. How to play baseball.
Yes.
All the song, they don't move the guy over. Listen, move the guy over. We're going to lose on drinking. That's fine.
Right.
Development about winning.
You're preaching to the choir over here.
Yeah.
This is all, that's all he talks about, is situational
and
hitting.
Development of winning. I said, move the guy over. Put the guy in. When you see Paul Konerko, one of the best hitters in baseball besides Fran Thomas. Fran Thomas don't have nobody even close to him. But nobody be close to Fran Thomas with this uniform on. Nobody. Better hit than Fran Thomas. Now than ever. Fran Thomas is Jesus Christ for the White Sox. Nobody would be better than them. But when you see PK, JD, try to hit man the second base, try to hit the ball to right field.
Yes.
Everybody say, hey, if I did it, you better do it.
Right.
And that made my job very easy.
It sets a tone and it sets a standard of how we're going to go about our business here.
No doubt. So long at bat, thankfully. Hey, that's okay. The play-by-play can wait. This is more important.
What did I tell you when I joined the White Sox in 94? What about Frank Thomas?
Oh, exactly what Ozzie said.
Yeah.
And you'd been around.
I've been around a lot of future Hall of Famers prior to that, and I'm like going, I've never seen anything like this.
Yeah. Well, Frank, I was his...
That's out of pain.
I was the pain in the butt to Frank.
Of course you were.
Oh, you remember that?
Oh, I remember
that.
Yes. You and Joey. Frank
wanted to kill me.
Yes.
Like, he can do it. I said, like, Frank, you're big enough. You know how to borrow. You know how to grass to get me. But the funny thing about it is that making a good player to what he was.
Yeah.
Frank Thomas, nobody wore that uniform. Harold Baines, Pudge.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We see a lot of guys, Hall of Famers. But Frank Thomas, no chance. Everybody.
Two down in the inning. DJ, you've got the final word here. Two outs, hopefully
you know
quick
what?
Out here coming.
The thing that means the most to me, Ozzie and I were teammates. I know Ozzie. I knew him as a player. How he held everybody accountable in the locker room, had fun on the field, but was out there to win. And that's what he demanded of the players when they played for him. Play the game the right way. He'd leave you alone. Go do your job. Write the lineup up and let you guys go play. But the thing is, Pods, Ozzie, is that lineup was built to win. You were in a position to start things off. Iguchi behind you, Dye, Konerko, Creedy, all these guys were winners. It was like the perfect lineup bullpen. Everybody had career years, it seems, in the bullpen. All these things took place. But that had to be the most special thing for you guys to be part of and see develop as basically a perfect team that year.
It was. And what was so special about it is the group of guys we had, right? I mean, we were probably not the most talented team assembled in 2005. But you bring up that point. We had a good group of guys that enjoyed being around one another. We were a tight-knit group. There was a competitive spirit and a competitive fire burning amongst all those guys, and Hawk Harrelson said it, the will to win.
Yes.
That group had the will to come to the ballpark each and every night and lay it out on the ballpark.
The reason I know what his team was, I watched the lineup in the opposite team, the playoff, and I got tears in my eyes. I swear to God, I'm emotional right now. I'm 61 years old.
Yeah.
And my granddaughter said, I love you, abuelo. That's right. But with the lineup we're seeing and the pitches that we were facing, we're not supposed to win one game.
Yeah.
We don't. I, like, man by man, Hall of Famers and stuff, but they know how better team than we have.
That's right.
Yes. Because of that spirit and because of that group, it came together as one, we played. You know, you hear the cliche about teams and putting guys together, but that group worked well with one another, and it was a special year from start to finish.
No question.
It reminds me the Marlins. The Marlins went to the World Series with the best team on the field, but because it was the Marlins, like,
Yes. Giants will beat them. Cubs will beat them. Yankees will beat them.
It's like everybody. All of a sudden, the Marlins got a better ball club than anybody.
Yes.
A club. You look in the infield, never better infield. That's why I give so much credit to the White Sox team, because the Marlins win because they have the best infield in baseball. Watch out. Best infield. Best pitching staff. They have the best guy behind the plate, and they should win. But when there was the Marlins, there was a surprise for a lot of people.
And I just left the room with that 25-some-odd guys, and it hasn't changed. Yeah. You know, when we just get a good group together, you could just feel, and you're swapping stories, and how are you doing, and we're talking about injuries and this and that, and nothing has changed.
Manzardo takes a walk.
Do you know what changed?
2-1 Cleveland.
I don't remember the kids. They was babies.
Yeah.
All the song, Joe Creasy, this is my daughter. I was so embarrassing. Because I know Creedy, and they say, "Oh, I thought you got boys." I think it was opposite. Then I see, my God, it's just all the kids I'm down there. Burley's kid, the show, when he threw the perfect game, his baby was like, what? I don't know. A couple months old, done all the song. I see this, a woman.
Yeah.
Then I say, you know what?
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm getting old.
But I can say the same thing about your kids for me.
Yes. Sure.
You know, when you came back here and your kids to me were youngsters.
Baby. And now they have kids and a grandpa. You know, it's time change, but with a good thing.
Yeah.
When we talk about, I don't know, tomorrow, oh, my God, I don't cry seeing Burley.
Yeah.
I cry when I see his daddy.
Oh, I know.
His family.
John,
I walk in, I start crying. Yeah. But tomorrow, I don't know, you will cry?
I might. I thought you were going to cry when I walked through the door over here. You weren't happy to see me?
I love you, bro. Hey, listen. Because the thing is, we keep in touch after that. That's a different thing.
Yeah.
But you know, see, Damaso Marte, Vizcaíno.
That's right.
All those guys, like, are you guys still alive?
Yeah. Yes.
When you hug those guys, obviously you're going to be sensitive.
I've said this to Len, and for us as broadcasters, at that moment, at that time, back in 2005 and years after that, we had friendships with you guys. I've played golf with Scotty Pods. Ed Farmer and I played golf with Scotty. I played golf with you. I mean, we've had friendships. It wasn't just I was up here doing my job, but it was different. Baseball was a little different then.
More fun.
And, you know, today's ball players are a little different than when they're dealing with us as broadcasters. But, you know, our relationships from 20 years ago to me, it's still I have friendships with all you guys, and it's amazing.
Well, I was... God was like, what's up? Well, it wasn't really my league. I was a coach.
Yes.
Then we went to Milwaukee. And they go, oh, why are my friends gone?
Yes.
Then a couple of days later,
you're
going to managing. But it's so many things in baseball go to so good stuff. Even when you fail or not, they're still there.
Yes.
The first thing asked me, like, what baseball do to you? I said, nothing. I make a lot of money out of them, but also the friendship I built through the years with the with everybody in baseball.
Big crowd here tonight. The 05 reunion is tomorrow. Very festive weekend here at the ballpark. So Vargas will now go to the bag, and now he backs up, and Manzardo will take off on this 3-2. Well, now Cannon will step off.
Well, this is obviously a very special reunion, 20 years. Scotty just told me a minute ago that some of these guys he hasn't seen since the 10-year reunion. And hopefully, 10 years from now, you guys have another one.
Thanks, fellas.
Gentlemen, thank you guys.
Great to see you guys.
Nice talking.
Enjoy the weekend.
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you. That's Ozzie Guillen, Scott Podsednik.
That was fun last night watching those two interact. I was behind them in the booth, and just to see, you know, Len and DJ are the best, obviously, but they knew. You could hear Scotty Pods and Ozzie catching up on the air, getting a chance to kind of eavesdrop as they were going through it was really cool. So I hope White Sox fans enjoyed us bringing that back for you. We're going to take a brief hiatus from all the nostalgia, but don't worry, it's coming back here shortly. But there is some pressing matters for current day, and that is partially the Major League Baseball draft, which will start tomorrow. And the man who is one of the best when it comes to breaking it down, he'll be on Major League Baseball Network's coverage, Jim Callis. He's going to join me next to get you set, White Sox fans, for some possible options for the White Sox with the 10th overall pick. We'll let you hear Jim Callis coming up next right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly as we're getting set for a fantastic Saturday afternoon of baseball here at Rate Field between the White Sox and Guardians, anxiously awaiting the pregame ceremony celebrating the 2005 White Sox. And also, we've got the Futures game later today and the MLB draft as well on Sunday. It is going to be a baseball extravaganza the next couple days. And my next guest now joining me from MLB Network. You see all his great stuff on MLB Pipeline. If you're a draftnik, you certainly know who he is. Jim Callis joining me here on White Sox Weekly. Jim, it is, for most people who are involved in baseball, at least your casuals, you're kind of winding down as the All-Star break is approaching. This is the busiest time of the year for you.
It is. It is. Like, just Saturday, Sunday, Monday, you know, as we're talking this. So today I've got, you know, a bunch of rehearsals with MLB Network for the draft tomorrow. Then I'm going to watch the Futures game. Then I'm probably going to be up till 2 or 3 in the morning working on my final mock draft. Then tomorrow I will get up and I will try to figure out more information about what's going on at the top of the draft, because you never know what's going to happen because the teams are coy because they're trying to save money with their bonus pools. Then we go live for a pregame show or a pre-draft show at 5 p.m. Eastern Sunday, and then the draft starts at 6, and I don't even know how long that thing lasts. It probably till around 11 o'clock Eastern, and then Monday, we get to get up, and starting at 11:30 Eastern, Jonathan Mayo and myself and Melanie Newman will be there for rounds 4 through 20, providing pick-by-pick commentary for rounds 4 through 10, and then kind of more filling in breaks for rounds 11 through 20, and I think that's an 8-hour broadcast. Things are not winding down for me right now.
Well, we certainly appreciate your time here on White Sox Weekly as Jim Callis joins us here. So I guess, you know, this is something that Major League Baseball has played around with the draft date. You know, it was in previous years, previous iterations, it was a little bit earlier in the season. They've pushed it back now to this weekend for, I don't know, is it like the third or fourth year now, or are we even past that at this point, Jim? Nevertheless, like, do you like the timing now of where the draft is placed on All-Star Weekend?
It's the fifth year. I'm officially an employee of MLB.com, but I will go ahead and say no, I don't like it at all. I don't think most of the team, it's just there's too much going on. Like my life would be easier. I think the teams would like it, you know, because they're trying to deal with the trade deadline at the same time. You could get the players out quicker. I don't know that many people are big fans of it, but I think it's here for right. You know, I don't think it's changing anytime soon.
I certainly understand MLB trying to capture maybe a fervent baseball fan who all of a sudden baseball's kind of, you know, it's this weird period where fans are used to the day in and day out, and then all of a sudden you've got the All-Star festivities, which, you know, it's pomp and circumstance and people like it, but if you're a diehard baseball fan too, there's also this weirdness of, what do I get out of this? So I understand Major League Baseball maybe trying to positioning something like the MLB draft in a more primetime vehicle, but at the same time, like you just said, there's so much going on. The trade deadline is right around the corner, and, you know, from the people that I've talked to around the park inside the game, you know, they echo the same sentiments that you just pointed out, is that it seems like it's not ideal for the front offices around baseball. But nevertheless, as you mentioned, it's probably here to stay, so no use complaining about it. Real quick, before I pick your brain about what the White Sox can maybe expect to be around at the 10th pick, I'm curious, Jim, I know you're fairly, I'm going to call you a local here. You're familiar with Chicago, and you know, I know all our fans out there are fairly well versed with the fact that you are local. So we are celebrating the 2005 White Sox here today at Rate Field, and I'm just curious your memories or impressions of that 2005 World Series champion team.
Yeah, I will try not to be too wordy here so we can spend more time talking about the draft. But I did go to the first two games in Chicago. I remember I don't know why I remember this, but Liz Phair sang the national anthem at the first game, and she went to high school. My wife was best friends with her in, like, grade school.
Wow.
So that stuck out, and I remember them knocking Roger Clemens around. I took my son, who was actually an Astros fan because he liked their logo. That was his team when he was younger, and he would have been 10 at the time. We went to game two.
Jim, I love that. Real quick, let me interrupt you because I love that because, I mean, my son's 15 now, but I do remember those days when just the logo, whatever it happens to be, that's the reason your kids start to follow a team.
It was that star logo. So anyway, I got tickets to take him to game two. He's really excited, and it rained forever, and it was one of those, I don't remember how long the game was delayed, but if it had not been a World Series game, that game would not have been played. But anyway, we stuck around forever. We went to the game. Astros were leading for a while. Like, all was well with my son. Then, you know, Paul Konerko hits a big grand slam in the seventh inning, so it's a sudden turn. But then the Astros rally to tie the ninth. My son's real excited. And then, of all people, Scott Podsednik goes deep to win it in the bottom of the ninth. And my son was crushed. But it turned around. So we parked on the other side of the highway, so we had to walk to the car after the game. He's despondent. You know, his 10-year-olds are. His team, this horrible loss. And what's funny was the people were going around trying to buy ticket stubs. You know, I think they were going to, like, you know, mount them in a frame with pictures. You know, memorabilia. You know, they're going to put something together. And people were offering, like, $20 for ticket stubs. And somebody came up to us and asked if we would sell our ticket stubs. And I was like, I actually like holding on to my ticket stubs. I was like, I'm good. And he offered my son 20. And my son said no. And he's like, how about 50? And my son looked at me and he's like, can I sell my ticket stub for $50? I don't really want to keep this.
Yeah.
Because his team lost. And I was like, sure, it's your ticket stub. So my son, like, 10-year-old, $50, especially... Yeah. That was 20 years ago.
That's a lot of Pokemon cards, Jim.
$1 million. So, yeah, that was like $1 million. So I it was just funny how his emotions went from, like, the terrible discipline of a loss to I have a $50 bill in my hand. So that is probably my memory. Those were both very good games. And obviously every game was close. And my final one, I was in the Arizona Fall League. I think I went to Arizona Fall League. I think I was there when they beat the Astros in Houston. And if I wasn't, I was there shortly after, and I ran into Roland Hemond, who was great and obviously associated with the White Sox for a number of years. And I want to say Roland told me, I forget what World Series ring that was for him. He'd won a couple. But I want to say October 26th, the day they won, was his birthday. Because I remember him telling me, I'm pretty sure they won the World Series on his birthday.
Oh, that's great. I love that, Jim. That is a great reminiscence, even though for your son, it obviously didn't work out the way he was hoping for. That's funny. That's a great way to kind of frame it. All right, so moving forward with the Major League Baseball draft, which does take place. Or, you know what? I'm going to stop me real quick. Futures game, because that is later today. Brandon Montgomery, sure. Noah Schultz are playing in that game for the White Sox. And this is another thing. I'll quibble with it. You don't have to say anything about it. But it drives me crazy that the Futures game is being played when all these other games are being played, Jim. Why can't we play that
100%.
On maybe Wednesday or Thursday when there's nothing going on the sports calendar? But
I've said that many times, and I'll also throw out, how about we play 9 innings?
Yes.
But I'm with you on that. Like, what's shining even bigger spotlight on it?
Rather
than having it on the Saturday.
Yeah, now that's something baseball fans absolutely get juiced about. But the problem is, you know, they're watching their teams play their whatever 95th game of the regular season, as Saturday happens. But there'll be plenty of people watching nevertheless. And Brandon Montgomery, who White Sox fans are very excited about, Noah Schultz are slated to play in the game later today. So I don't know what to make of it. What do you take out of the Futures game when you watch it?
It's just fun watching all the players on the same field. I mean, I will admit it's a little different than when it started in 1999. And it was just like, oh my gosh, you can watch all these guys on the same field. Like, it's a little different today because of all the video. I mean, I think almost all the minor league games are available streaming, so you can actually watch guys. But I remember when it started, to see that many guys all on the same field, it was amazing. It was comparable, you know, and I'm almost 60 now, but it was comparable when I was a kid watching the All-Star game. Because I grew up in the D.C. area. We didn't have a team. We could watch Orioles games on TV, but you basically only got National League games like NBC's Saturday Game of the Week or maybe Monday Night Baseball. So like the All-Star game, like, you got to see all these National Leaguers you never got to see play, and it was pretty cool. But no, it's still fun to see a lot of these guys go. And the White Sox, I mean, those are two of the best prospects in baseball. Noah Schultz is probably the best lefty pitching prospect. He might have the best slider in the whole minor leagues.
And Brady Montgomery, who is part of the Garrett Crochet trade, I mean, he hadn't made his pro debut because he broke his ankle last year right before the draft. And I think he's been even better than the White Sox could have hoped. I mean, he's raked pretty much. And I would suspect we'll see him in Double A before the end of the year.
Yeah, I like what you said there. The one thing, I think he has been better than White Sox people have expected. And, you know, honestly, as all these players have arrived here this season so far, the young prospects that everybody's excited about, the one thing that I do know it feels like it's still missing a little bit is a potential middle-of-the-order bat. And I think the hope is that Braden Montgomery could be that down the road here in a couple of years. So I like to hear you say that. Yeah, I agree with you. Double-A definitely seems like it could be on the rise in here later this season. Jim Callis of Major League Baseball Network and MLB Pipeline joining me here on White Sox Weekly on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. And the real reason we are having Jim on, it is the draft on Sunday. The White Sox hold the 10th overall pick. Because of the interesting draft rules, the lottery, and I don't even know where to go with that. But, Jim, before we get to what the White Sox might do, what about the top three or four prospects in this draft who you expect to hear their names called first? Who are those guys that are at top of your board right now?
Yeah, our top prospect at MLB Pipeline is Ethan Holliday, who's the brother of Jackson, son of Matt. He's built more like his dad. He's 6'4", 210. He's a high school shortstop from Oklahoma, probably moves to third base. He's probably got the most usable power in the whole draft, and he could be a future 35 home run guy. I think the number one pick is by the Nationals is either going to be him or Cade Anderson, who's number two on our board. He's a left-hander out of LSU. He was MVP at the College World Series, led the nation in strikeouts. It's not like overpowering stuff. It's more like it's a four-pitch mix, but it's four solid-plus pitches with control and command to match. He's pretty polished. He's going to move very quick. I think if I had to guess today, I think he goes one. I think Holliday, teams at two and three aren't on him as much. I think Holliday probably goes four to the Rockies if he doesn't go one. Then you got Seth Hernandez, who's the best high school pitcher in the country from Corona, California. He's a right-handed pitcher. He's in the mix a little bit to go number one. No high school righty ever has. I don't think that he necessarily will because teams are a little scared of that demographic and the risk that comes with it. Although it seems like all pitchers get hurt.
Yes.
Anyway, but I mean, he's up to 100 miles an hour, advanced changeup, four pitches. He can spin it, strikes. Yeah, he's not going to be a two-way guy, but he'd be maybe a top two-round pick as a power hitter. He's super interesting. And then I think those are kind of your consensus top three talents. You're like Eli Willits might be the next best guy. He's another high school shortstop from Oklahoma. His dad, Reggie, played in the big league.
Yeah.
Also, and is now an assistant coach at the University of Oklahoma. And Eli is a very well-rounded player. He's a switch hitter. He can hit. He can run. He'll stay short. He's kind of like – he reminds me of Anthony Volpe with better tools at the same stage of their careers.
Okay.
And if you could guarantee that he'd hit 15 or 20 homers, he might be the most well-rounded player in the draft. So those are probably the top four guys.
Interesting, and you kind of led off with Ethan Holliday, and you said, though, you could certainly see him ending up with the Rockies. I'm curious, like – for Colorado, would that be something where, you know, it's because of Ethan Holliday's pedigree as well as what he is as a player? I mean, just the idea of having a son of one of your franchise legends come back and play. I mean, is that too appealing for a franchise like the Rockies to pass up?
Yeah, I think that's a piece of it. I mean, obviously the overriding factor is talent, and I think they think he's the best player in the draft. But then, I mean, White Sox fans know what it's like to go through, like, being on pace to set a record for losses. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Rockies are worse than the White Sox were last year, and I think their future is more dire. Like, their farm system and core young players isn't as good as Chicago's. And so that would generate a lot of positive vibes. You get a guy who a lot of people have ranked number one on all these media prospect lists. And, oh, by the way, his dad was, like, one of your best players in history and helped lead you to World Series. And he kind of physically resembles the dad. That's just the cherry on top.
So those are the top picks, or likely top picks, in this year's draft. The White Sox will be picking 10th. Jim Callis, I'm curious. I see on your latest mock draft on MLB.com that you've got JoJo Parker. Now, this was posted on July 3rd, and you mentioned that you're going to be reworking and posting your latest mock draft here in the not-too-distant future. So I'm curious, JoJo Parker, do you still think he is somebody who could end up with the White Sox?
Yeah, I feel like that's the guy they want. I mean, they're being realistic about, like, you know Ethan Holliday's not getting to you. You know Cade Anderson's not getting to you. there's kind of a top tier of 10 or 11 players, and it's tricky because you don't know which ones are going to get to you. I think if JoJo Parker gets to them, that's their guy. I think he's the best all-around offensive player on the high school side. He probably moves to third base, which is fine. He'd fit the profile there very well. It's great makeup. He's got a twin brother. It'd be fun if they draft JoJo, watch and see if the White Sox go after his brother Jacob, who's a slugger, isn't as polished as a hitter, but they're twins. It's a pretty interesting story. Mm-hmm. The only tricky thing is, I kind of feel as the draft got closer, everybody kind of loves JoJo Parker. Yeah. And I don't know that right now anybody's saying, like, man, that's the guy we have to have. But I feel like he's in play for the Cardinals at 5, the Marlins at 7. I think both those are strong possibilities. I think if the Blue Jays are probably going to take a pitcher, but if they don't, I think it's JoJo Parker. The Reds, depending on who's there, he may be the best guy on their board. So I don't know that I'd say JoJo Parker's the favorite for any of those picks, mm-hmm. but I feel like it's enough interest that it might be tough for JoJo to get to number 10. But I just feel like that's the guy the White Sox would like to see. Like he's the best realistic hope. And whereas a month ago, I think you'd look at it and say, yeah, the guys we're looking at, he'll be the best. Now I think it might be like, oh, no, like I think other people like this guy. You know, I just think people have liked him more and more as it's gotten closer to the draft.
Interesting. Jim Callis joining me here for another moment on ESPN 1000. Jim, the nice thing about hearing you talk about JoJo Parker is that he sounds like he could be a potential impact bat. And I think anybody yep. who looks at the White Sox organization would agree that that seems to be the biggest thing that they're lacking. They do have strength up and down the organization when it comes to pitching. If you know, not what you think they're going to do, but if you were a GM of a baseball team getting ready for the draft, we always hear the, oh, best player available, which I understand. But the truth is, it feels like you can make an argument for any one pitcher or any one hitter when it comes to your pick, because that's kind of the nature of baseball. Do you want pitching or do you want hitting in that moment, except for those rare cases when we're talking like the elites one or two or three when you know who those guys are. But would you lean in any particular direction as if you were the general manager of a baseball team, considering like your organizational weaknesses?
Yeah, it would really. With my first pick, I would always take the guy I thought was the best available player, even if, like, we'll use the White Sox as an example. And I agree with you. Like you look at them and they seem really stocked with pitching, and you like some more impact bats. But let's say I'm picking 10, and Seth Hernandez. The teams are like, oh no, he's a high school right-hander. There's risk. I don't want to take him. I don't think he'll really get to 10, but he might go 9. He might get all the way to the red. If he's there at 10, I would take Seth Hernandez, might be the most talented player in the draft. And I just say, look, this guy fell in our lap. We maybe don't need a pitcher as much. If he was on the board and JoJo Parker was on the board, I still would take Seth Hernandez. But I think with your top pick, you have to take the best player. It would be maybe one thing if, let's say, I was picking at the bottom of the first round and I have a legitimate contender and I'm looking at hitters and pitchers. And it might be, oh, like this pitcher, maybe we can pitch him out of the bullpen late in the year, like the White Sox did with Chris Sale and Garrett Crochet years ago. Like that might be a tiebreaker. But when you're picking at the top, you're usually picking up there because your team isn't doing well. And I think you just got to take who the best guy is.
Jim Callis joining me for another quick moment here on ESPN 1000 and White Sox Weekly. Jim, maybe, and sometimes I assume that everybody listening who's a baseball fan knows everything that, us hardcore baseball people are familiar with. And this is where I talk about slots and, bonus pool is available to teams. Can you do like a quick primer for people out there who may not understand why the baseball draft is a little bit different than all your other drafts, where you absolutely, no doubt about it, are probably picking the guy who you think is the best player?
Yeah, no, and this is good. I have a well-rehearsed spiel that I hope is fairly concise. So in the baseball draft, assignability winds up being an important factor as much as actual ability, because you get a bonus pool. There's a dollar amount assigned to each pick in the first 10 rounds, and you total that up, and that's your bonus pool for the first 10 rounds. And you could go over it, but if you go over it by more than 5%, you lose a first-round pick. And if you go over by more than 5%, there's increasing penalties. Nobody's ever done that since the start in 2012. So it's a pretty hard cap. Nobody's going to forfeit a first-round pick. So the White Sox, for instance, their pick at number 10 is valued at $6.2 million. They don't have to give that guy $6.2 million. It's just used as a calculation for their pool. And their overall pool is right at $12.2 million. So if they go 5% over, that gives them like about another $600,000. So they can go $12.8 million. So just as an example, let's say, I don't know, somebody, Ethan Holliday falls to him, which is a shock, and the White Sox pay him $9 million. Then they're going to have to pay other players less than their assigned values in the first 10 rounds to make that fit. Similarly, let's say their board blows up and every guy they like goes off the board and they don't really love anybody. Then maybe they take a guy who signs for $5.2 million and they save $1 million. And then they pick again at 44 instead of, you know, having $2.2 million for that pick. They could go to $3.2 million. And you can, with the high school guys, a lot of times you can kind of float them down if, you know, to the teams that have more money. The White Sox have a $12.2 million pool. And I think that ranks, I want to say, around 10th in baseball. The Orioles made a trade and screwed up. Like, they acquired a supplemental first-round pick, and it screwed up my original list of where how much money everybody had, because the Orioles now have more money and the Rays have less money. But I think the White Sox maybe have about the 12th highest pool.
Okay.
They really, as you were alluding to, the draft lottery rules where you can't pick in the top six for more than 1 year in a row if you pay into revenue sharing really hurt the White Sox, because the difference between if to say they'd won the number one pick in the lottery instead being locked in at 10, that's like a $5 million difference, which is a ton of pool money. Not only is it costing you the ability to get the guy at the top of the draft, it's also costing you pool money that you could use on other players as well.
Last thing I have for you, Jim, before I let you go, and I appreciate all your time. So with that 44th pick, their second rounder after the sandwich rounds, who do you think the White Sox, give me a few names or somebody who you think could be an interesting player available to them?
Well, they're not afraid to take high school guys. So I could see them going for a high school guy. And it's like, I don't have it in front of me. Everybody jokes that like they like to draft players off their area code games.
Yes.
And so I don't have the roster in front of me, but that would be where I would go. I would go look at that.
Okay.
If they get tied to Cruz Schoolcraft a little bit, who wasn't on that team. But I don't know if you could really push him to 44. I've heard Jaden Falski, who is an Illinois high school kid, who I think was on their area code team. I think he's going to go in the 30s. I've heard Sean Gamble. Maybe they could push him down there. Like, the interesting one, I don't know if they could push him there, is Jack Bauer from Lincoln Way, you know, who threw 103 miles an hour, the hardest throwing high school lefty, hardest throwing high school pitcher ever. You know, the high school pitchers, people are more comfortable about taking them with their second pick than their first pick. I don't know that he could get to 44, but I mean, you know, Illinois high school lefty, like, that's worked out pretty well for the White Sox. Maybe him. It's hard to say because you don't know who's going to get there, but I do feel like they're going to be probably more apt to go for a high school guy with ceiling rather than taking, okay, we're going to take the best available college guy here and just give him a slot bonus.
And you were correct, Jim. Jaden Foskey, the Nazareth product, was on the area code team for the White Sox. So there's a reason why we call on you when we need our draft information, Jim. I appreciate your time today. It was excellent. Thanks for making us smarter about the MLB draft.
I know. Always good talking to you, Jeff. And now I'm going to get back to trying to figure out who's going where in the draft tomorrow as I work on my final mock draft, which
will take
me well into the evening.
We can't wait to read the final mock, and we can't wait to watch you on your coverage on the MLB Network broadcast of the draft on Sunday. Thanks, Jim. Appreciate it.
Okay, thanks, Jeff.
Again, that was Jim Callis of Major League Baseball Network. You can see him tomorrow evening when the Major League Baseball draft gets going around 5 o'clock Central Time. Join us at the ballpark tomorrow for Family Sundays presented by Coca-Cola. The first 125 kids to enter at Gate 5 will head to a special area to receive autographs from some of their favorite players, plus enjoy family-friendly activities. Kids can run the bases and more. Tickets start at just $10. Includes all fees. To learn more and purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/Sunday. When we come back, we will remember the 2005 postseason run with a great montage of all the fantastic highlights as heard here on ESPN 1000. This is the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. New this season, save 30% off with the Summer 3-Pack. Lock in a Sox-Cubs game and pick two more matchups that fit your schedule.
Don't miss the Crosstown Classic and other great summer games. Customize your summer three-pack. To purchase, visit whitesox.com/three-pack. Obviously, very excited as we are getting set for the pregame ceremony celebrating the 2005 World Series Championship team 20th anniversary this year. And to get you set, we're going to play all of those fantastic moments from the 2005 season as heard here on ESPN 1000. And sit back and enjoy.
2-2 on Coco Crisp. Here's the pitch. Swing and a ground ball. Ross Glove, diving stop to his feet. Underheads to Takatsu for a White Sox winner.
That's how you draw it up. I believe one over the minimum. I believe that 28 men batted today for the Indians.
1-0 the final. The Sox win over the Cleveland Indians. The home opener, the season opener, goes in the books with a W.
Tying run at second, two outs. The pitch by Hermanson. Swing, and he popped him up. Right side. Canerco is under it. Paul makes the catch for a White Sox winner.
The 0-2 pitch with two outs. Boone swings and misses. A White Sox winner.
1 hour and 39 minutes. This is one of the fastest games I've ever seen. He struck out a dozen. A career-high 12 strikeouts for Burley, allowing one run on three hits. And all three hits belong to the same man, Ichiro.
3-2 on Dye. Hawkins with the pitch. Dye hits a drive. Deep left center field. And this is going to go. Home run, Jermaine Dye.
Rowland takes off on the 3-2 pitch.
Swing and a drive. Deep left center field. This might go. It's a goner and a White Sox winner.
This place is electric.
Tricep kick, another 3-2.
Swing, long one to left. Down the line to the pole, to the bullpen. Gone, home run. After a lengthy at bat, Canerco puts the Sox up 4-2.
Look at second, 2-2 pitch, swing, ground ball, right side, through for a hit. Rounding third is Creedy, steaming home. The throw from Brown late. Sox lead 2-0. Pitsetnik's 3-for-3.
C works from the high set, the pitch. Creedy hits a high fly ball, deep left center field, and it's a goner, a two-run homer.
The pitch to Frank, swing, and a high fly ball. That's deep center field.
Back to the wall, Sullivan, goodbye! A home run out there by the Rocks.
The 1-1.
Dye hits a drive, deep left field, way back, it's a goner and a White Sox winner.
Here's a swing and a high fly, deep right, cuts them all. This is way out of here, folks, a two-run homer for Everett.
Here's the 0-2 pitch. Swing and a drive, left center field. Here's Rowan on the run, on the move. He dives and makes the catch for a White Sox winner.
Hang a star on that one, folks. The runner doesn't go, the pitch, high drive, deep left, it's 11. It's 11 home run. Frank, for the second consecutive night, has hit a three-run home run. Yesterday it was in the eighth. Tonight it's in the fifth.
The pitch on the way. Thomas unloads. He hits it deep to left. And it's a three-run homer.
This place is up for grabs.
Look at first, the 2-1. Swing, bouncing ball.
Garland jumps and gets it. Throws to first.
What a play by John Garland.
There's a 2-1 to Gucci.
Swing and a long one to left. This has got a chance to the track. Chris to the wall. We're tied at 3. Home run for Tadahito.
Fever works from the stretch. The pitch.
Rowan sends it deep to left field. This is going to go. It's a goner and a 3-run homer.
That went to the Metal Supply Company building on the second level.
Now the 1-0 pitch. Here it comes. A swing and a line drive. Pop for Paul Canerco. He made the play. It's a White Sox winner and a Central Division title.
Got to find a way to not only win here, but keep going. I mean, there's three more levels to go to, and I've been to the second round. I'd like to get to the World Series and have a chance to win that, and so this is what it's all about right here.
The pitch to Brzezinski. A swing, and there's a drive. Deep left center field. Way back. It's a goner. A three-run homer for A.J. Brzezinski.
Light it up and go nuts for a while. Goes opposite field. A bomb to left. It's been a huge spurt.
And here's a drive deep right field. This is going to go. That's the first home run he has hit this season. A three-run shot for Pitsetnik, and his home run comes in the division series.
The pitch, a long one to left center field. Pitsetnik back to the wall, and he reaches and makes the catch for a White Sox winner.
One ball, one strike on Aguchi. A look at first, the 1-1. Curveball hit deep to left.
This has got a chance to the bullpen. Three-run homer he picked up at Sednik. Sox lead 5-4.
The pitch to him. A ground ball to the shortstop. Uribe has it. And he throws out Renteria for a White Sox winner. The pitch. A swing and a high fly ball.
Like I
deep
said.
Left field. Way back. And it's a gunner. Way out of Fenway Park for Konerko.
He threw it again. And it did too much. I said the monster seats went over it.
Nel Duque is ready from the belt. The pitch. A swing and he popped him up. Off with the mask, A.J. Pruszynski. Here comes Konerko. The infield fly rule is called, and Konerko catches it in the fungo circle up the first baseline. And another 3-2 pitch to Graffinino. Swung on, he popped him up. The shortstop, Uribe, calls for it. The infield fly is called, and Uribe makes the catch. The runners go, the pitch. Strike three, a swing and a miss on a curveball down and in. Hocus pocus, says Hernandez.
We get him the cap, the cape, and the little wand because he'll make a rabbit out of his hat.
The 1-0 pitch. A swing and a smash. Konerko a dive. He has it while moving to his right. Flips to Hernandez for the out. A sensational play. Bobby Jenks is ready. The kick and the one strike pitch. A swing and the ball's hit past the mound to Iguchi. He has it and throws him out for a White Sox winner. And the White Sox are going to the American League Championship Series.
The payoff pitch with two outs. AJ swings and misses a splitter. He strikes out. Five strikeouts for Escobar as he has worked through three innings. And A.J. has been awarded first base. Was that catcher's interference? He said that the ball bounced, and now here comes Socha, and Erstad's got something to say, and A.J.'s at first base. A.J. is at first base. That ball did bounce.
A pitch by Escobar. Creedy hits a drive. Left field to the corner. This one is off the wall. Ozuna scores. It's a White Sox winner, and the ALCS is tied at a game apiece.
Fans are going nuts all the way around this facility. We call U.S. Cellular. We got even. Nice job by Pruszynski. Greedy, by the way, hit an 0-2 pitch. Sox win.
Another wide one. Everett will come up with two men on base.
Don't think Ilaki doesn't know that either, John.
Konerko hits a drive. Deep left center field. This one's taking off, and it's a gunner! A two-run homer for Konerko, and the White Sox lead 3-0.
Guerrero is 1-for-3 with an infield hit tonight. He swings and drives it to right. There's Jermaine Dye for a White Sox winner.
Now 3-2 on Konerko. The pitch on the way. Konerko hits a drive to left center field. Way back it goes. Back to the wall. It's a gunner. A three-run homer for Konerko. And the White Sox, like last night, break out on top 3-0 in the first. The 1-2 pitch from Freddy Garcia to Kochman. A hot shot to second to his left. Iguchi gobbles it up and throws him out for a White Sox winner.
0-1 on Joe Creedy. Angels lead 3-2 here in the seventh. And here's Escobar's pitch. Swinging a long one to left. This has got a chance. Revere running back to the bullpen. Gone. We are tied at 3.
The 3-2 pitch coming up. A look to second. The runners take off the pitch. Greedy hits a ground ball up the middle. That is knocked down by Kennedy. He's throwing home. Here comes Rowan. Safe at the plate. The White Sox lead 4-3 in the eighth.
Frankie Rodriguez kicks and deals.
Konerko drives it to deep right center field. This is hit way back and off the wall. Dye stops at third. The White Sox lead 5-3 in the ninth in Anaheim. Here's a swing and a ground ball to first. Konerko has it. He steps on the bag. The White Sox have won the pennant. They've won the pennant. A White Sox winner, and they're going to the World Series. They're mobbing Konerko on the first base side of the infield. The White Sox have won 4 in a row, and they'll start the World Series at home on the South Side next weekend.
Now the pitch, a swing and a high fly ball.
Deep right field. This might go. It's a gunner! A two-out home run in the first inning for Jermaine Dye.
Swing long one, deep left center. Gone for a home run. Creedy has untied the score. Sox lead 4-3. Joe, have a postseason to remember.
On the stretch, the pitch.
A hot shot to third. Creedy dives. He has it. Throws to first to get him. Oh, that was hit hard.
Runners at the corners for Piggio. Two down, the pitch. Swing, bouncy ball to third. Creedy dives. Got it. Gets up. Throws to first. Hang a star on that. Just put the World Series on his shoulders.
3-2 with two outs. Springer with a double glance to second. The kick and the pitch. A swing and a drive. Deep right center field. This is going to get down and go to the wall. Pruszynski
scores. Pacetnik has two. He's going for three. Here's the throw in. It's cut off. A triple for Pacetnik. The White Sox lead 5-3. Here's Jenks with the 0-2 pitch. A fastball struck him out swinging for a White Sox World Series Game 1 winner.
Here's Konerko on the pitch to PK.
Swinging a long one to left. It's going to go. It's a slam. Sox lead 6-4. Light it up.
The 2-1. A swing and a high fly ball. Deep right center field. This is way back in the gap. And it's a gunner. A White Sox winner. A winner on a Pacetnik home run. And the White Sox go up 2-0 in the 2005 World Series. Garland ready to go. Here's a 2-2 pitch. Biggio takes a heater. Strike three. Got him lucky. Fourth strikeout for John Garland. Works around the leadoff walk here in the seventh. So two down. Here's the 1-2 pitch. Strike three called on the inside corner as Hermanson went back in there. He doubled up on the pitch and got him with a 91-mile-an-hour fastball. 2-2 with the bases loaded. Two outs in the ninth. Here's the pitch from El Duque. Swing and a miss. He struck him out. And we're going to extra innings in Houston. Tied at 5. The sidestep, the kick, the right-hander's pitch. Blum drives it to right field. Deep down the line. In the corner. And it's a goner. A home run for Blum. And the White Sox jump out in front of the 14th. 6-5 on a bomber by Blum. From the belt, here's the pitch. A swing and a high pop fly on the infield, back up to the outfield grass. Uribe is there. He has it for a White Sox winner. And the White Sox are one win away from a world championship. No score in the eighth with two down. The 1-1 pitch. Germaine drives it up the middle. A base hit to center. Harris scores. The White Sox have a 1-0 lead in the eighth. Out from the set to the runner at second, the 2-2 pitch. A high pop fly down the left field line. Moving toward the stands in foul territory. Uribe is over there. He reaches. Did he catch it? Did he catch it? He caught it. He caught it. It went into the stands and brought it back out. How about that? Unbelievable. Here's the 1-2 pitch to Palmeiro. A ground ball past Jenks up the middle of the infield. Uribe has it. He throws. Out. Out. A White Sox winner and a world championship. The White Sox have won the World Series, and they're mobbing each other on the field.
Legit chills listening to John Rooney and Ed Farmer call all of those classic moments from the 2005 season. It's reunion weekend here at Raid Field, and they will have a pregame ceremony with so many of those players in attendance. It is going to be spectacular. So if you're coming to today's game, make sure you get inside the ballpark early so you don't miss a moment. You will not want to, I promise you that. Let's pause 10 seconds for stations to identify themselves. We just heard so many classic calls from both John Rooney and Ed Farmer, and it was absolutely fantastic last night. If you missed it, John Rooney joined Len Casper and Darren Jackson in the booth. He's here in attendance for reunion weekend. He did an inning of play-by-play and actually had an opportunity. I felt like it was poetic justice watching John Rooney call a Lenin Sosa home run as he joined Len and DJ in the booth. I'm going to let you hear that call, and also John Rooney joined Carmen and Yurko yesterday and talked about how special that season was. It's all coming right back right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
By example, experience the unique joy of helping students thrive. Teaching is a journey that shapes lives. Are you ready to begin? Explore teaching at teach.org, a campaign supported by the U.S. Department of Education, Teach.org, and 1 million teachers of color.
It's four words no parent should ever hear. Your child is sick. It's four words that change everything. Those four words can define a family. It's four words that are filled with pain, heartache, and grief. And with those four words, the innocence and joy of childhood disappears. But Starlight has taught us four other words that make all the difference. The power of play. Happy kids heal faster. That's why Starlight Children's Foundation delivers happiness through gaming, toy deliveries, and more to 3 million kids at more than 700 hospitals across the country to deliver happiness when it matters most. Learn more at starlight.org.
Neiman, the second baseman, plays up the middle. And there's a drive. That's hit deep. Left center field, and it's a goner. There's a home run for Sosa. The White Sox are on the board.
It's a fun way to start out last night's game as John Rooney was on the call, a guest of Len and DJ in the booth, and he called Lenin Sosa's first home run of the game in what would ultimately be a White Sox walk-off winner in extra innings last night, getting set for game number 3 of 4 between the White Sox and Guardians, with the pregame ceremony celebrating the 2005 World Series champs coming your way. We'll have it all for you right here on the home of the White Sox, ESPN 1000. On the flagship station, John Rooney joined Carmen and Yurko earlier this week and talked about how special that team was.
I've heard broadcasters before talk about, you know, like, and I'd love to know the process. Like, what's going through your mind? Are you formulating something to say, or is it just totally extemporaneous? And, like, that just came to your mind right in the moment on that strike three when you said hocus pocus?
Well, I've never pre-thought anything on any call. I think if you do that, you'll probably mess it up so badly that they'll say, what in the world was that clown trying to do? That's usually the way it comes out. I mean, it's like Jack Buck's call on Kirk Gibson's home run. I can't believe what I just saw. It's still one of the amazing calls that I've ever heard. And I was in the dugout of the A's getting ready to interview Oakland players after a win at Dodger Stadium. And I had that headphone on and listening to Jack make that call. I saw the ball go up off the bat, and I thought, I need to get to the other dugout now, one of those. But if Jack had pre-planned that, I don't think it would have come out that well. And yeah. Vince Scully's call was pretty good on TV, too.
Yeah.
But, no, you don't have that. I remember thinking, though, at the time, you know, something special might be really happening here. Coming out of that moment, you let the Red Sox win that game, you don't know how that series goes.
Right. What do you have, like, can you pinpoint, like, a favorite moment during the playoff run that October, or is it too hard with all the crazy sort of memorable things that did happen across the three series?
Well, that was pretty special right there. That has always been one of my favorites. You don't go into Fenway Park and then get out of a jam like that without a run scoring. But El Duque was incredible. And the other time was probably the Jeff Blum home run in the World Series, where I remember Eddie and I looking at each other saying, somebody win this game, will you? I mean, it just kept going on. Somebody do something, and Jeff Blum did. And especially after he sat around the cage that day, you know, I'm going to hit a home run in the World Series. And lo and behold, he did.
That's awesome. When did you guys start to think, like, during that season, like, okay, maybe something special is possible here. And with baseball, it's crazy. You know, you could win 105 games and get knocked out in the first round. You could win 86 games. You can be World Series champions. I mean, it's just October. There's so much variance. There's so much craziness. So you never really know, I guess, John. But, like, when did you guys start to think as that season went along, like, this team's really good and something special is possible?
Well, when they finally put it away and before going to Cleveland from Detroit to end the season, the regular season, and they finally won, had a chance to celebrate after they had a good-sized lead, and it went down to next to nothing. And just the way that all played out. But once they got over that hurdle and got things started, and then you get to the Angels series, and A.J. Pierzynski's the only person I know who ever stole first base. That was huge. And then you sweep the Houston Astros in the World Series. The Astros could have won any of those games. I mean, they could have gone either way.
Yep.
So that's when you know something's pretty special, when you start winning those close games and the starting pitching started to click. It was really an impressive run.
Who was the most underrated player on that team?
Oh, the most underrated player on that team. I don't know if you can have an underrated player team on a team that wins a world championship.
Well, I mean, a guy like Cliff, a guy like Cliff Pleat had seven victories that year, seven and zero out of nowhere.
He sure wasn't underrated in my mind.
And never replicated it again in his career.
You're probably right. You don't talk about Cliff the way you do some others, but my goodness, there's always somebody different every night. That's why I say I'm not sure you can really have an underrated player on a world championship team unless it happened to be Bob Uecker in 1964, who didn't get to play at all against the New York Yankees for the Cardinals because Uecker was out shagging fly balls with a tuba before the first game of the World Series, and Johnny Keene didn't like it. Stuff like that happens, but everybody had to perform to win. And, of course, back then, it was the best of seven in the World Series, not the playoff run that you have now that goes on sometimes a month or better.
John, we're talking to John Rooney, who's a great longtime play-by-play voice in Major League Baseball, does the Cardinals now, of course, was the voice of the 05 White Sox here on your home for White Sox baseball now and back then in 2005. I don't know if you can answer this or what your thoughts are on this, John, but like, why do you think that team is maybe not talked about as much as some of the others when you think back of the great champion teams of this century or even the last 30, 40 years in baseball? To rip off an 11-1 run like that, why do you think that team maybe doesn't get the requisite due or the kind of love that some of the other championship teams from this century get?
Well, but probably because they weren't able to come back and do it again relatively fast after 05. It's about the only thing I can think of, because it should be talked about in very high elevation. That is an unbelievable run. And look at what the starting pitching was able to do during that run. And then look at what Bobby Jinks.
Yeah.
God rest Bobby. Nobody saw him coming.
Yeah.
Nobody saw that kind of ability to end a ball game. I mean, it was over if you had a lead in the ninth inning with Bobby Jinks available and well-rested. He was unbelievable.
We kind of take it for granted today, don't we, John? I mean, you're still calling games. You know what it's like. You see it. You know where the game is right now. You just, at this point, it's almost like you expect the guys coming in the eighth and ninth inning to throw 101 and just have nasty stuff. But 20 years ago, I think you nailed it. Like, it was new. It was different. Bobby was a Rule 5 pick. A lot of people didn't even know about him, even White Sox fans, until you started hearing about what he was doing at the minors and when he got called up mid-year.
Well, let's back it up even more. You get a pitcher to go through the lineup one time in a postseason game, and then it's a parade of bullpen pitchers. How about the way the starters carried the mail so much for the White Sox through that year or through that postseason? And then you had Bobby Jinks finishing it up, and you had some capable relievers, though, along the way that helped put the White Sox in that position. But now you see everything scripted. Oh, one time through the lineup, we're going to pitcher A, then we're going to pitcher B. And then by the time they sit down to have Thanksgiving dinner, they can't raise the fork to their mouths because their arms fall off.
Right.
It's different. But to have that kind of pitcher ready to go at the end, that made a world of difference, especially from what we tried to experience Shingo Takatsu. Mm-hmm. Yeah, didn't throw very hard, wasn't very effective, and Dustin Hermanson wasn't healthy. And he had been really good in his career.
Yep.
But then Bobby Jinks comes up, and there it is. That was an element that other teams just couldn't overcome.
We played the highlight of Game 3 in Boston. You hear Farmio in there. When you think of your old partner and Farmio, and, it's crazy to think how many people are now gone that were part of that, players, broadcasters, Melty's past and Will's and our buddy Dave Wills. When you hear that and you think back to Farmio in those days, what do you think of, John?
Well, I'm just thinking that, when you come to Chicago, Ed's not there anymore. And on the north side, Santo isn't with us. Vinny's not with us in Los Angeles. Jerry Coleman, I did many games with Jerry, the Padre voice on CBS Radio for a number of years. He's not there anymore. There's no Tim McCarver, no Bob Uecker. It's the reason I'm so excited to be here. It's the people that you get to associate with, you get to travel with, You get to kick the stories around and share those great moments with them. That's what you really miss right there. And I've incorporated a few things in my play-by-play over the years. One guy I've been very fond of, when I was growing up outside of Kansas City, the first voice of the Royals was Buddy Blattner. He used to do the St. Louis Hawks, and he did Game of the Week with Dizzy Dean on NBC. And I usually say, in this ball game has come to an end. That's the way he ended a game. And for Ed, there's one thing he used to call a home run, light it up.
Yep.
Well, in St. Louis, we set off fireworks at the end of the game, and I say, you know, light up the night in downtown St. Louis. You know, that's kind of something to remember Eddie by. And I started a Redbird winner when I was doing the Louisville Redbirds as a tribute to Jack Buck, who called things as "that's a winner." And now I went from a White Sox winner to a Redbird winner again in St. Louis. Some things like that just to remember guys that I either work with or really thought a lot of.
Nice tributes. I love all that. What are you looking forward to most this weekend?
Just seeing everybody. I've just been so excited to reconnecting. I've seen A.J. Pierzynski along the way and the great work he's done on Fox. And he was really good with the Cardinals for a short time. We had A.J. when Yadier Molina was injured there toward the end of Yadi's career. That was nice. It's always good to connect with Mark Burley. Joe Creedy was at a Cardinal game not that long ago. Mm. As Joe lives in central Missouri. But Carl Everett was one of my favorites. And I remember with Carl Everett, I didn't say much to him in spring training. And at the start of the season, and I walked up to his locker one day in the clubhouse, and I said, "I don't see it." He goes, "You don't see what?" "I don't see why you're such a bad guy. Everything I've ever heard about you, you're a bad guy. I don't see it." And we became pretty good friends that season.
That's great.
And I enjoyed watching what he did.
What did he say when you said that, John?
He goes, "Well," he said, "people just don't get to know me." I said, "Hey, must be the case, because you've been great with everybody. The association's here in the clubhouse, and the players like you and all that. I just heard a lot of bad things." And he kind of smiled, and then we got along fine.
Fun listening to John Rooney there, the voice of the White Sox, along with Ed Farmer, back in the 2005 World Series championship team, which we are getting to celebrate here momentarily here at Raid Field in a pregame ceremony prior to today's game against the Guardians. Take advantage of one of our best offers this season. Get one ticket and two beers to select games starting at $19 with Miller Lite Baseball and Brews. You must be 21 and over with a valid ID. That includes all fees. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/brews. I'm Jeff Meller here at Raid Field. We'll come back and set the scene for you. This is White Sox Weekly on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Wildlife around the globe needs help. And when you help protect them, you become a friend of the San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance. A real friend. The kind of friend you want to thank. And not just with a card or a text, but with a song.
Thank you for being a friend.
Travel down the road and back again.
Your heart is true. You're a pal and a confidant.
Jeff Meller back here live at Raid Field as we're getting set for the third of four games between the White Sox and Guardians. White Sox won last night's game number two of their split doubleheader against the Guardians in walk-off fashion. Beautiful way to cap off what was a fantastic evening as the White Sox immortalized Mark Burley with a bronze statue out in right field, right in between section 104 and 105. If you're looking to make your way around the ballpark, it is in right field on the concourse there to get your picture taken if that is your intention. Hey, students, it's easier than ever to get your friends together for a White Sox game. Sign up for student pass alerts and get exclusive access to lower level ticket offers. Text STUDENT to 244-769, that's 244-769, to sign up, or visit whitesox.com/student for more information. Yes, we're getting set for another pregame ceremony as the White Sox celebrate the 2005 World Series champions, and there are so many former members of that team in attendance yesterday evening. A lot of them were here to celebrate Mark Burley. So it's going to be fantastic. Again, if you are coming to the ballpark today, I would encourage you to get through the gates quickly because the ceremony is going to start promptly at 2:30 today. That's going to do it for us on this edition of White Sox Weekly, but we will carry for you all the pregame festivities on our pregame show. I'm Jeff Meller. Thanks to Jim Callis and all the fabulous guests from the 2005 team who joined the station this week, which we replayed for you. Thanks to Jack McGrath and Brendan Riley as well. Sit back, relax, and strap it down because we're going to give you the Sox pregame ceremony coming up next on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.